This is Scenic Roots talking writing. Our guest is poet and teacher, KB Ballantyne. KB teaches creative writing, theatre arts and literature at Ray County High School. She's also an adjunct professor at Chattanooga State Community College. Her most recent collection, just published, titled Edge of the Echo, opens with a quote from the Roman Stoic philosopher Seneca, who lived in the first years of the first century AD. The quote from Seneca reads, "Life is the fire that burns and the sun that gives light. Life is the wind and the rain and the thunder in the sky. Life is matter and is earth, what is and what is not. And beyond is in eternity." That's a knotty little sentence. I can't
quite really is.
Get on top of that.
Every time I typed it, I thought, have I missed some punctuation or have I forgotten a word? But no, it was that. And I think that's one of the things that draws me to it, because you have to stop and pay attention to it. I think if I were reading a whole essay, that would bother me, because I would feel like I needed to get on with the rest of the reading. But because it's the end of that, I appreciate stopping and thinking, oh, what is and what is not, and beyond that is an eternity. Okay.
The thrust of the quote seems to be a distillation.
Yes, just like poetry.
Did you write this collection of poems before you chose that quote, and did that quote for you capture the essence of your poems?
These poems are from a wide variety of years. Every time I go to Ireland or Scotland or England, I end up writing more poems about those places, but those poems don't always fit into other collections. And so I have poems from the times that I've gone, and they just don't work in other collections. And so I go back and I think, oh, one day I'll have to put together another collection of Celtic poetry. And I finally had enough. And then I went back and started going through, and I thought, okay, now how do I want to do this? And I had just read The Four Elements by John O'Donohue. And oh my gosh, that was a fabulous book. And I thought, Four Elements, that's totally a Celtic idea. And I thought, I can definitely arrange my work in earth, wind, water, fire. And when I started laying it out like that, I was amazed. And I had four or five quotes that I wanted at the beginning that I thought would work at the beginning of the collection. And it wasn't until I finally put it all together that I thought, okay, this is the quote that encapsulates what I think this book is. You know, it's the fire and the wind and the rain, or the water and the earth. And all of that speaks to eternity, and it speaks to the here and now, and it also speaks to eternity. And the idea of the Celtic idea of the four elements being part of earthly and spiritual nature.
You talked about being in John O'Groats, and I'm wondering if in Scotland, in my mind, it feels more apparent in Scotland and in Ireland. The elements are so much a part of the world in a way that it's impossible to ignore them, as you can when you live in a city, even a city the size of Chattanooga. You can avoid the elements in those places. They're so visceral.
Yes, absolutely. You cannot get away from the wind and the rain when you're in Ireland and Scotland. It's just impossible. And of course, normally I don't really hang out in the cities in those places, because I like being out in nature. I like being on a coastline and experiencing the wind and the rain. And even in the middle of July, I do appreciate that. I'm not a go to the beach and lie out and get a tan kind of person. I can sit on a beach for a little while, but I mean, you can see I've got that Celtic skin, and and it does not tan, and I'm not good at just sitting. And I totally appreciate walking. I read about Wordsworth and and a lot of other writers walking, and as you walk, you can see and you can think, and you can't do a lot of that when you are surrounded constantly by people and things. I mentioned John O'Donohue already. One of the things he pointed out, and that I agree with, is that we are frightened of silence. It makes us feel vulnerable. But the upside to that is that it allows us to dream. And we can't dream if we're constantly bombarded by sound and people and things. And so I think going out into the wild weather, wherever I am, I mean, I can do that here too, certainly. We had a massive thunderstorm. I didn't go out and stand in it, but I did open my windows and enjoy the sound of the wind and the rain and thought about things instead of having the television on or being on my computer or something.
Two things come to mind. The first thing I have to tell you, reading your poems, I thought, oh man, this is somebody I'd like to go for a walk with. You are so aware of everything around you. When you said, you know, people, and I think it to some degree is true of all of us, that silence can make us uncomfortable. But think back over the last year, it's almost as if silence has been imposed on all of us.
Right.
And I think it's changed all of us in the process.
Yes, and it's amazing the response to it. I think there's been one of two responses. You are either relieved by having had the time to be silent and learn to think again. You know, we forget to do that. Or it has made a lot of people that I know anxious and depressed. And I don't know if that's a personality thing. You know, in introverts like myself, I'm perfectly happy with the silence. That doesn't bother me. But I know extroverts are banging their head against the wall saying, I want to talk to people. So I don't know if it's that kind of thing or if it's or what. But yeah, the being having this time imposed could have been a good thing for some people, but it might not be good for others. You don't want something imposed on you in order to do it.
This is Talking Writing. Our guest is KB Ballantyne, who, as I mentioned in the introduction, is a teacher working with high school and college students, which requires her to be something of a performer. And interestingly, like many performers, she is an introvert.
And I teach for a living, yeah. And I am on all day long, and I love my job and I love my students. But when I get home, I don't want anybody to talk to me. I don't, you know, I just want to rest. Yeah, if you need to be around a lot of people in order to energize, then you're usually an extrovert.
Right.
But if you need to be alone in order to re-energize, then you're probably more of an introvert.
What age are your students?
High school and college.
So how has the last year been for them?
Well, my college students were virtual, and that was... I personally feel like a train wreck. I think they didn't feel like they were being held accountable because I guess it didn't feel real. But the school system I work for, we've been live in person since July 29th, and that has gone well. It's been gone exceedingly well. And we've had some virtual students, people who opted to stay at home, but their grades are very poor in comparison to the people who are showing up at school where we're doing live instruction, and it's been wonderful. And all the kids who have been there are very grateful that we're doing this live, and that we've been live all year.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's difficult to make plans.
Yes.
And then have everything out
of
your control.
They're at the planning age. Right. And the high school kids, that must be so weird for them, I would think. A year is a long time in their lives.
Yes, it is. You know? As I find out often, daily. I'm like, this article was just written in 2014. And then I realize, well, they were like, what, in eighth grade or something? And I go, oh, yeah, it's a lot longer ago for you than it was for me.
This is Talking Writing. Our guest is poet KB Ballantyne, whose most recent collection of poems just published, titled Edge of the Echo, is broken into four sections, each named for one of the elements, fire, water, air, and earth.
This one is called Words Circling, and it's from the air section. Mm. To make my poems surge and sing, I would kidnap the color and chorus of birds. I'd seize the bright flash of bluebird that combines sky, hydrangeas, summer sea, and mix it with the wren's sun-bronzed song. I would catch the language of sorrow and love that weave through each line of a thrush's melody, the harmony of the finch burnishing stanza's timbre. Hijack nuthatch and meadowlark to pry deep into the verse of trees, flies and gnats snatched midair. Let passion blaze like a cardinal's fire in winter nests when couplets, tercets collide. The shimmery pulse of hummingbirds capture cadence, sweetness and luster so small, discovered only by tender readers. Circling above, blackbird inks words with a silent turn of curved head, listening to the rhythm, the shade, the echo of tears.
I love that. I would kidnap the color and chorus of birds. The art of the poet is to... I had this conversation with a poet a couple of weeks ago. She was talking about her skills as an editor. And she had written a blog about it. And in the blog, she had the first draft of the poem and then the revised draft. And in the revised draft, all of the language was active. And it was all very much, come in, be a part of this, experience this.
Yes. Yes.
So if the art of the poet, and I think it is, I think that's one of the reasons that we value poetry, is because aside from the beauty of the language, letters shaping into language ripple like ocean waves. I mean, oh my God, I wish I'd written that. There's that part of it, you know, the aesthetics of it, and it's just, oh man. But then there's also that immersion in the moment. And we live in a world where, as you were just saying, and the generation that's come of age in this century, I wonder if they're ever going to have that sense of the immediate that we had, and that's apparent in your poetry.
That's a good question. I try to talk about it in my classroom, but I don't know.
That's what I was wondering. Do they have any, how could they? They have no context, right? They have no distance from it. They can only talk, in that sense, they are very much in the moment.
Right.
Because it's all new to them. But they have a control over the moment that we didn't have. And I guess that's really the question. Your poetry is a celebration of those moments and those environments that we cannot control. That's right. the power and what draws us to them.
Right. Well, the oddest thing happened today in class. We were talking about T.S. Eliot's Part One, Burial of the Dead from the Wasteland. And a lot more of the students understood this poem than have in the past. And I was really surprised at the comments they were making. And then somebody said in the very last class that I talked about with this, one of the students said, well, if he's talking about writing out of the chaos that was World War I, we can definitely relate to the chaos part of it, if not from war, then from this last year. Everything is topsy-turvy. Everything is different than we expected. There's nothing you can make a plan for. And I thought, wow, what a great insight that, you know, they can extrapolate from this very difficult poem something that they're going through now. How do you live when you don't know what's coming next? And I think that's what we've all experienced this last year, and I think that's why everybody is more frustrated and more anxious and more on edge, and we're not as nice to each other, I don't think. And especially when we're wearing masks, it's like, you're not a real person because I can't see half of your face, so I can dismiss you in whatever way I want. And that's disheartening.
And I've asked you about your kids, but I haven't asked you about yourself. You are an introvert, so in that sense, this year was, but again, you have a foot in both worlds because you the work you do is so social,
right,
and so interactive, and you've been doing it since the summer. So effectively, for the majority of the pandemic period, mm-hmm. you have been contriving to create normality in a situation that, as your student said, you know, is so completely outside the norm.
Right. Because even though we're being as normal as we can, a lot of places aren't. And so they can depend on coming into my classroom and seeing me and discussing English or theater or whatever class it is they have with me and with all the other teachers. But when they leave, you know, do they get to go to the sporting event, or has it been canceled? Or do they, you know, can they go to work, or has it been shut down? Or, you know, so those uncertainties, which is why I really value the fact that we're giving them what we can. You know, we've provided what we can as a school system.
I feel like we keep dancing around this central notion, but it seems somehow germane. Your writing and the world you are creating is very much one of the heart.
Oh, that makes me feel good that you saw that, that you feel that. That's good.
And as you have been saying, we are living in a moment when the heart is under assault in that sense, you know, our connection with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that which makes us alive, feeling beings. You're such a feeling being, and so much of your poetry, while it has literal meaning, it's the feeling that comes through. This must have been a tough time for you, but at the same time, it's kind of an interesting time to put out your poetry.
Right. I mean, when we first shut down last year in April, I had a great time writing. I mean, I wrote every day, and I thought, wow, I'm getting a lot of stuff done. I don't have to leave my house. Then as it went on, and I couldn't leave my house, you know, and instead of it, you know, because we kept thinking we would go back until it became apparent we wouldn't. And then after that, it got a lot harder to write. So,
Why do you think that was?
It's very difficult to get, it takes a lot of time to get everything going on a computer and to try to set everything up so everybody can see it. I finished out my school year. I mean, thank goodness for Zoom. I'm very glad, but I'm weary of it. And that was one of the things that was difficult in working for the college last semester, is that, you know, I could go into the classroom and we could have a discussion the previous year, but now I had to get home, set up the computer, make sure everything was working, make sure everything was loaded, make sure it was all up and running, and then hope they all had connectivity, and then try to figure out how to get the timing for the quizzes and make sure everything was uploaded for when the papers were due and the time frame for that. It was just a lot, instead of just walking into a classroom and saying hi, making that immediate connection physically in the moment. All right, your papers are due at this time, and then they hand me papers, physical papers. You know, it's a lot more technical work when I want to be more involved in the actual study itself. I want to talk about the stories in English. I want to talk about the plays in theater. I don't want to prepare to talk about the stories. And
yes, that's exactly what I'm getting from what you're saying. The technology is driving you crazy because it's taking so much of your energy and it's so distracting.
My office was a wreck because I had piles just to make sure I could get to something, and I don't like living in mess, and it's very stressful for me psychologically to have all of that stuff piled and, you know, getting the shakes because I can't put it away because I might need it. Somebody might, you know, need me to find something.
I find myself reading your poems and thinking, this is really the world we should all be living in. There's no computers there. There's no technology, you know. It's just, the thunder and the rain and the waves and the flowers and the trees and the birds. And
well, those are the things that'll last.
Yeah. And the world that until, I guess, the beginning of the 20th century, everybody just took for granted that that is the world. There's no other world. And in the last 100 years or so, and again, you know, in this new century, increasingly so, it seems we're becoming more and more, it's what you said about silence, that we're also, that one of the things that makes us uncomfortable about silence is that we've become so divorced from the natural world. Mm-hmm. The unnatural world is never quiet.
Right. Right. And it's always coming at you. But it's always coming at you in little bits.
I had a friend a long time ago who said, I love Chinese food, but an hour later you're hungry again. That's how technology makes me feel. It feels as if you're getting a full meal, but you're not really. You're getting a snack.
That's a
really
good comparison.
And it's not even a very filling snack, you know?
That is an excellent comparison. Right. It satisfies at the moment, but you have to keep going back for more.
This is Talking Writing. Our guest, KB Ballantyne, has just published a collection of poems called Edge of the Echo, in which she celebrates the natural world, far from the technology that demands our constant attention. The poems are all set in the wild places she visited, in Scotland and Ireland and England.
Amazing. I could watch birds all day. I have, I'm very fortunate to have a deck right off my kitchen window, and I feed the birds like nobody's business, and I get to watch them all summer. I so enjoy sitting on the back porch and just watching them. All right, this poem is from the Earth section, called Rising Umber, and it took place on Grimspound, which is in Grimspound, which is in Dartmoor National Park in England. Dusk lavenders the horizon, and in the half-light, the stones begin to speak. Wind slips across the mountain, asterisks of mist softening the ruins. Sheep drift through the field, tufts of green hollowed into havens for leggy lambs. I cross the collapsing threshold beside a wall still stacked, still circling crumbled huts. A ram eyes me, shambles to his hooves and paws the grass. Swallowtails rush, scythe the air, hooded crows stalking the shadows. I stoop into the shelter of stones where wind fades, palpable stillness rioting the air. Through gathering gloom, a man and woman emerge, crossing the ridge of stone. They scan the valley, silhouettes bruising, ghosting the ribbons of fog. When I glance again, only emptiness, star breath, slivered moon paling the sky, an owl summoning the dark. Yeah, I was at Dartmoor National Park.
Dartmoor's huge, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, it was brilliant. I just loved being there. I could have wandered there forever. And it was right at dusk, and there was a fog, there was a mist rolling in, and it was just supremely beautiful. I mean, a lot of people might say bleak, but I loved the craggy cliffs and all of that was there, and just could smell the field, you know, the grass in the field and the lambs and sheep.
I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, when you were saying before that you had never felt that connection in England the way you did in Scotland and Ireland, I was wondering if you've ever been down to Cornwall or down to the southwest.
I have.
Think maybe you'd feel more of a connection down there.
I think so, too. I've spent one day, I went to Land's End because, you know, Land's End. I just
well,
had
you've
to
been
say
to John
I had
Groves,
been there.
So you've got to go to Land's End.
And I think I would like to explore that area a little more, maybe not the western tip, but maybe more of the southern part of that. I think that might speak to me. I mean, I love England, don't get me wrong. Because the Lake District, oh my gosh. I spent, I guess, 2 summers ago, I was there, and that was just glorious. But it's not a visceral thing.
KB Ballantyne's newest collection of poetry, just published, is titled Edge of the Echo. The rest of my conversation with KB Ballantyne, in which she read several more of her poems, will be in next week's program. This is Scenic Roots Talking Writing on listener-supported public radio.
Someone lying in the sunshine, marking time. Hear the sighs, close your eyes. Ba-da-ba-doo-da-da-da-ba-doo-da-da. Stepping from cloud to cloud, passing years of light. Visit the frosty start in the backward flight. Soaring.